It's the voice that you've been looking for. No Strings Podcast with Mike Damon comes to you every week. You can visit www.nostringspodcast.com or email info@nostringspodcast.com. No Strings Podcast. It's our voices in voice. It's No Strings with Mike Damon. Hello and welcome again to No Strings, Nigeria's first LGBTIQ podcast, and I am Mike Damon as always. Hope your week was great. All the same, I want to thank you for tuning in with me here again on No Strings. And on this week's episode, we're going to have an interesting discuss with an author, and we'll be discussing issues concerning homosexuality and Christianity, looking at these issues from his book, Faithful to the Truth: How to Be an Orthodox Gay Catholic. This book examines homosexuality and Christianity from a Catholic perspective. But before we actually dive right into this conversation with this author, we'll take a quick time out and then come back to continue. I'll be back.
No Strings is proudly supported by
KSA Radio, South Africa's premier LGBT radio station.
Join us on there every Wednesday from 12 noon to 3 p.m. Visit gaysaradio.co.za.
Do you know that you can be a part of No Strings? Yes, you can be. Support your voice, our voices, be an ally. For a membership or support and partnership information, please email info@nostringspodcast.com or visit www.nostringspodcast.com. Of course, we always love to hear from you. It's No Strings with Mike Damon. Hey, welcome back to No Strings. Yes, before the break, I said that we will be examining homosexuality and Christianity from a Catholic perspective, and doing this with the book Faithful to the Truth: How to Be an Orthodox Gay Catholic. This book was written by Dr. Stephen Lovett in 2012. Dr. Stephen is a British Catholic writer of philosophy, theology and poetry, and also has a PhD in physics. This book speaks on several subjects that have been used over the years by Christians to condemn homosexuality. It speaks on subjects such as marriage, intimacy, sex, and the very long-standing controversial issue of Sodom and Gomorrah, a story in the Christian Bible that many point to as an evidence to prove that the Christian God clearly disapproves of homosexuality. Many homosexual people have given up on Christianity as they think that the Christian God does not have an interest in their life anymore, as they are already condemned. But Dr. Lovett will speak what he terms as truths and facts to these issues that have over the years affected the LGBT community in general. We'll go ahead now and have that discourse with Dr. Lovett. I'll be back.
You're listening to No Strings.
Please, sir, can you briefly tell us about yourself?
I was born in 1958 in Stoke-on-Trent, a city in the middle of England, to working-class parents. My father was a semi-skilled labourer working in the pottery industry. I was brought up as a Protestant, a Methodist specifically, by my mother. My father was not a Christian, having lost his faith in the aftermath of the Second World War. I was fortunate to study physics at Cambridge University, and it was there I became a Catholic. Subsequently, I have worked as an electronic engineer, a computer programmer, a research physicist, and a high school teacher of science. I took a career break between 1990 and 1993 to obtain a doctorate in physics from Bristol University, where I met my long-term partner, David, who was also a Catholic. More recently, I've retired from paid employment and spend much of my time writing books of philosophy, theology and poetry. My other interests include gardening and the theatre.
Dr. Lovett, in 2012, you published a book on homosexuality which is titled Faithful to the Truth: How to Be an Orthodox Gay Catholic. Please, can you briefly tell us about it?
In brief, the book pulls apart all the arguments made to the effect that being gay is contrary to being a Catholic. It shows that all these arguments are based on ignorance and prejudice, and that neither the Bible, nor Catholic tradition, nor any sound philosophical analysis supports such an assertion. The book goes on to outline a good way at looking at love, sex and friendship, one which shows how marriage is really a sacrament, and one that is open to all who have a concern to grow together in holiness and love.
Okay, you've been very public and open about your sexuality, and in your book you stated clearly that you battled with your faith as a Catholic Christian and with your homosexual attraction. Now, how did you eventually find peace with yourself? Technically, I'm asking if it is possible to balance Christianity with homosexuality.
At first, coming out was traumatic. This was because I had been somewhat brainwashed into believing that homosexuality was wrong. My first reaction to self-identifying as gay was to think that I was unacceptable to God and would have to align myself with Satan. I got through this with the help of a close friend who was then studying to be a priest. He convinced me that being gay wasn't fundamentally wicked. He now is a Roman Catholic priest and is still a good friend of mine. I don't think it's a question of balance between being gay and being Catholic. In the end, Catholic ethics amounts to the question, does this act do any harm either to an individual, especially the person acting, or to society at large? If the answer is clearly no, then the act cannot be judged as wrong. In all my research, I have never come across any coherent account of how homosexual activity, as such, does any harm to anyone or to society. Moreover, the Bible doesn't indicate that homosexuality is wrong, and neither does any kind of consensus of Catholic writers from the past, once one has distinguished their justifiable hatred of the sexual exploitation of children and dissolute living from any interest in homosexuality as such. Hence, from a Catholic perspective, it is impossible to judge homosexuality as wrong in itself. Moreover, there are a number of famous Catholics who had homosexual relationships and wrote of them. Saint Augustine writes in his Confessions how he was devastated when his first love, a young man, died of some horrid disease. St. Jerome wrote love letters to his beloved Rufinus. The medieval bishop saints Alcuin and Anselm wrote passionate letters to other men. The medieval abbot St. Alred wrote an entire book on the positive value of same-sex love.
That was interesting. Under the chapter What is Homosexuality? In your book, you dealt with the different words used to describe homosexuality in times past, its origin, its usage, and its different meanings. You went further in the chapter to closely examine the true perception of homosexuality, both in times past and currently. So for the benefit of those who haven't read your book and are listening right now, I ask, who is homosexual truly? And from the Bible's viewpoint, is there anything wrong with being gay?
Who is a homosexual is a matter of words and of definition, and I don't think that such questions are generally worth asking. What really matters is it wrong to fall in love with someone of the same sex as oneself? And is it wrong to be sexually intimate with someone of the same sex as oneself? The Bible has nothing clear to say about either of these questions. It seems that David and Jonathan fell deeply in love, and the Bible presents this fact in an entirely positive light. It is possible that two other same-sex relationships are featured obliquely in the Bible, and these are also presented in a positive light. As for homosexual intimacy, this question is never addressed. St. Paul's epistle to the Romans condemns pagan sex rituals which featured castration and men pretending to be women and vice versa, but it has nothing to say about two men or two women being sexually intimate as part of a committed loving relationship. On two occasions, St. Paul condemns softies and male bedders. These are transliterations of the Greek words he uses, but there is no way of telling what he means by this condemnation, as these words are not used anywhere else in the Bible or in contemporary secular literature. There is no good reason whatsoever for believing that they have anything to do with homosexuals. In fact, there is a Greek word for men who have sex with men, which Paul could have used and did not use. Traditionally, being gay was viewed as wrong because sexual intercourse between two men could not be justified by an intention to procreate, and was thought, for no good reason, to be necessarily associated with promiscuity, the sexual exploitation of children, and an entirely dissolute lifestyle. Nowadays, the Catholic hierarchy rejects this account and falls back on the mere biological fact that sexual intimacy of same-sex partners is not open to procreation as a reason to condemn homosexuality. This contrasts with the fact that it is specifically taught by the hierarchy that it is perfectly fine for a man who has a sperm count of zero to have sex with his wife after she has had her womb and ovaries removed, though such an act is no more open to procreation than any homosexual act.
Now that's revealing. Now about the issue of marriage for homosexuals under marriage in the early church, a subsection under the chapter Family Values. In your book, you treated issues and the different concepts of marriage as mentioned in your book. Many people say that since two men cannot biologically procreate, then this automatically proves that there is an error in any gay union, and this notion has been used by many to nullify gay relationships and marriage. But it was quite a surprise to me to get to discover in your book that even the controversial Paul of the Christian Bible discouraged the idea of marriage for Christians, even as many has claimed that marriage was instituted by the Christian God, and so therefore by default everyone must marry. But Paul in the Christian Bible stated clearly that people can only marry if the temptation for sex becomes unbearable. Of course, this is referenced in the Christian Bible in 1 Corinthians 7:1-9. Isn't this contradictory with today's Christian teachings about intimacy, marriage, love, and sex?
Simply put, yes. Unlike contemporary church authorities, the Bible is not very interested in sex, or romance, or marriage. The Old Testament's main concern in these matters is to make it clear that sex is not a spiritual thing at all, and has nothing to do with religion or worship. It takes marriage for granted as an aspect of human society, but has little to say about it except to forbid close relatives from marrying. One book of the Bible, the Song of Solomon, is an erotic love poem, but this poem makes no mention of either marriage or procreation. The only love story in the Old Testament is that which concerns David and Jonathan, two men. In the Gospels, Jesus has little positive to say about family or marriage. Instead, he warns that loyalty to family is typically opposed to kingdom values, and that a faithful Christian must expect to experience conflict within the family as a result of their faith. The Apostle Paul presents two conflicting ideas about marriage. The first idea seems to be, as you say, that marriage is a last resort for those second-class Christians who judge themselves unable to maintain a sex-free lifestyle. The second idea is that marriage is an elevated state of being, which serves as an image of the relationship between Jesus and the church. It is hard to understand how one person could believe both these ideas. And some commentators assert that Paul did not write Ephesians, the epistle in which the second idea is found. St. Augustine was the first Catholic theologian to deal with the topic of sex, marriage, and procreation. Writing after he had repudiated all romantic attachments, he taught that sexual intercourse was a degrading activity, and that the experience of orgasm was especially degrading. Indeed, he asserts that sexual pleasure is itself a punishment for the original sin of Adam. He states that the only excuse for coitus was the definite and explicit intention to procreate, and that apart from such an intention, copulation was sinful. Later Catholic theologians went so far as to say that even when a married couple had sex solely for the purpose of having children, the fact that they experienced pleasure was itself sinful. So it was never possible for coitus to be free from blame. The Council of Trent, which was the Catholic Church's response to Protestantism, toned this teaching down. It simply says that marriage is not to be used for purposes of lust or sensuality, and that the chief purpose of matrimony is for the spouses to help each other to become better human beings. Pope Paul VI reversed the traditional teaching of Augustine and his followers, which insisted that coitus was a degrading act, which could only be excused if there was a definite intention to procreate. He turned it into the idea that coitus was a good thing in itself, so long as it was open to procreation, even if there was a definite intention to avoid conception. Pope John Paul II went even further, promoting the idea that sex and marriage were profoundly spiritual matters. He invented one in which he justified heterosexual marriage and physical coitus as being of great religious significance.
Now, your book treated the subject of Sodom and Gomorrah in chapter 6, and this for sure has been a very heated and controversial issue amongst many. This same subject in the Christian Bible has been used by many over the years to condemn homosexuals and to invalidate homosexuality, rendering it as evil and immoral. Please, can you tell us what is the actual biblical truth concerning this story? And is this even an actual historical account? Because some has argued that the story of Sodom and Gomorrah was actually fabricated.
It doesn't really matter whether the story of Sodom is historical or a myth. Mm. What matters is what the story signifies, what moral it is meant to communicate. If you look at the original text rather than English translations, there is no evidence that the story is about homosexuality. The three angels who visit Lot and who the citizenry of Sodom want to molest are never addressed as being male.
Mm.
Moreover, Lot offers them his daughters rather than his sons-in-law as substitutes for the angels. Finally, the prophet Ezekiel directly states that the sin of the Sodomites was not to aid the poor and needy out of their prosperity. He does not mention homosexuality. The idea that the Sodomites were homosexual originates with a Jewish writer born in about 20 BC called Philo, many hundreds of years after the story of Sodom was written down. Moreover, the very first person whom we know used the term Sodomites to mean homosexuals was a man called Peter Damian, who wrote in about 1049 AD.
The current Catholic Pope has been pretty clear about his stand against the issue of homosexuality and gay marriage. Why do you think he has remained adamant about the acceptance of homosexuality?
Pope Francis has not been at all clear, in fact. On the one hand, he seems to be quite open-hearted personally towards gay people. There is a video of him affectionately greeting a long-time friend of his and his same-sex partner. He's recorded as saying that he is not one to judge the sincerity of any homosexual person who seeks for God. On the other hand, he has made it clear that he disapproves of same-sex marriage. In my book, I suggest that this may be a disagreement just about words. And that the Pope may be quite happy for same-sex relationships to be celebrated and blessed within the Church, and even recognized as sacramental, as long as the word marriage is reserved for the sexual union of one man with one woman. The Pope is in a difficult situation, trying to keep reactionary and progressivist factions within the Church together. I think that he sees himself primarily as a bridge builder, but does not feel himself on secure enough political ground to propose any definite means of effecting reconciliation between these two disparate factions. The situation within the Catholic Church is similar in many ways to that within the Anglican Communion, which is presently tearing itself apart over homosexuality, except that what is done publicly within Anglicanism, under the pretext of transparent democratic process, is done mostly behind the scenes in the Catholic Church.
So finally, how can people find your book, just in case they're interested in getting it?
My book is available from Amazon. Also, any good bookshop should be able to obtain it for you if you supply them with the ISBN.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Stephen Lovett, for discussing this very important subject with us here in No Strings. It was indeed a pleasure. So we've come to the end of this week's episode, and I want to say thank you for listening. To get Stephen Lovett's book, Faithful to the Truth, How to Be an Orthodox Gay Catholic, please use the link under this episode on the website at www.nostringspodcast.com. Don't forget that you can also listen to us on Gay SA Radio, South Africa's premium radio station, every Wednesday from 12 noon to 3 p.m. GMT. Support us here by either donating or sharing our posts and articles on Facebook or Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at NSPodcast1, and also find us on Facebook using facebook.com/NoStringsPodcast. For more information and inquiries, please email info@NoStringsPodcast.com. Until next week, bye-bye.